You're listening to Boat Radio. I'm Dr. John Ross of Clipper Telemed Plus, and this is Medical Emergencies at Sea. I was going to do a program on another topic, but Mike McDowell asked me to consider talking about deliveries at sea, and it sounded like kind of an interesting topic. Also kind of timely because I just finished doing a simulation, so kind of some training with our emergency department staff, where we got one of our staff to pretend that she was pregnant. We had a simulated pelvis. I know this sounds bizarre, but anyway, placed in a special area nearby, and she went through the motions and then ended up having a unexpected delivery in the emergency department. And we went got a chance to work through with our staff the policy and processes of delivering and where the equipment is and who to call. And so it was a good experience. It was particularly useful because about 4 days after that, a real person showed up with abdominal pain who ended up having a baby as the cause of her pain. So again, of course, as so often happens, coincidence and timing is everything. So we're going to talk about what happens when a baby is going to be delivered at sea or in a yacht.
Oh, Lord, please bring me shelter. Please bring me shelter from yonder storm. Oh, Lord, please bring me shelter. Please bring me shelter from yonder storm. Oh, sun, won't you shine on me? Won't you shine on me when the rain has come? Oh, sun, won't you shine on me? Won't you shine on me when the rain has come?
Hi, this is Boat Radio. I'm Dr. John Ross of Clipper Telemed Plus, and this is Medical Emergencies at Sea. So we're going to talk about babies on board boats. Oh my God. And really, I think that it comes under two kind of categories. One would be the woman who knows she's going to have a baby at some point, the expected group. They've most likely had prenatal visits with a physician or a knowledgeable person, whether it's a midwife or some other kind of birthing coach along the way. We should be aware of any other medical issues they might have, such as diabetes, gestational diabetes, or hypertension, or any other pre-existing medical problems prior to even having the pregnancy. And then we know a little bit about their previous pregnancies, whether they've had any difficulty with labor, whether they've had a C-section, and that kind of stuff. So that's the expected group, a little bit easier to plan, a little bit easier to be prepared for. And ideally, people that are in the final stages of gestation are not going to be traveling and should not be going off into remote places on even for hours away from shore with a potential delivery in the works. Then there's the unexpected group, and you might kind of scratch your head a little bit about that one, but it happens, as I just said a few minutes ago. So the people that deny they're pregnant and end up just kind of going through the full 9 months, there's ignorance, just don't really know what's going on, and I guess sort of attribute either their swelling belly to putting on some weight, so maybe the fetal movements as being some sort of bad gas. It's hard to kind of imagine, but it's true. And then there's the mentally handicapped folks that, again, just truly don't have an understanding about what's happened, and they may well have been sexually assaulted by somebody, which is really a deplorable state. But again, these sort of things happen from time to time. I have to tell you, though, right off the bat, that I personally believe that having a baby on board a boat is just generally a bad idea. And I know that there are going to be people out there who live on their boats who feel it's perfectly safe. And I think, again, in the right setting, the right context, the right understanding of risks involved, you may well be able to prepare and mitigate. I just I think, again, generally we know that about 90% of deliveries are going to go fine. I mean, that's the way we were designed over millions of years to deliver babies. So, our nature has designed a pretty good system. But about 10% of the time, there are going to be people that will have complications, either mild or more significant, that may require some sort of intervention from someone who does have some skills. And about 1% of deliveries will end up requiring significant neonatal resuscitation resources, a neonatal unit, specialty care. And so, it's 1 in 100, maybe not that common. Of course, it's not going to be me until it happens to be you. Again, I think that we need to be cautious. I'll also mention that when things go wrong in deliveries in the last stages of labor, things happen incredibly quickly, and you can go from things going along quite well to all of a sudden fetal distress. And other things besides fetal distress and a bad outcome with the delivery and impact on the infant, but also mothers can get stalled labor. They can have tears of their vagina and sort of outside skin area, perineum. There can be significant bleeding. People bleed to death in labor or post-labor. There can be infections and so on. So again, it's just not a particularly benign process. So the scenario, we can make multiple scenarios. One I used actually in our emergency department was someone who was a mentally handicapped person who had Down syndrome and was sexually assaulted unknown to anybody and presented with some abdominal cramping, which quickly progressed to significant pain, was brought in with unable to really verbalize her problem, and then proceeded to declare herself. So you can imagine being on a boat, you've invited some friends out, you've gone out for a sail, you're several hours away from shore, and even shore may not have a healthcare facility rate, by the dock, and so there may be some distance to an appropriate place even once you get back to shore, which you need to keep in mind. So there may be multiple hours away from some kind of place that can manage this, and the person who was a guest of your guest is now starting to complain and is having some severe pains. So when the water breaks and there's a big whoosh of fluid from the vagina area, that the penny should drop. And that's probably one of the more common things to occur, is that, sort of a strange belly pain. No one quite knows what's going on. You think it's maybe a bowel problem, and then all of a sudden, kazwoosh, fluid comes issuing forth, and it's like, oh my goodness, this woman's pregnant and is about to have a baby. So what are we going to do? Well, this is, again, not ideal, especially if it's going to be a surprise. And I think your best bet is to first think about calling for help. Let's just take a break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Oh, sun, won't you shine on me? Won't you shine on me when the rain has come?
Hello, I'm Captain Bob May from Bob's No Wake Zone Boating Radio Show, and you're listening to Boat Radio.
Earliest prehistory reveals mankind's innate connection to the sea, from boats of woven reed in Egypt to Homer's black ships of the Trojan War, down to the naval battles of Greece, Rome, and every civilization since. I'm Brandon Huebner, and I'll present the history, archaeology, and literature that connect us with our past on the sea, all that on the Maritime History Program. Join me as we voyage down through the ages and witness the development of sailing, trade, and much more. The Maritime History Program, with me, Brandon Huebner, every Wednesday here on Boat Radio.
Hi, this is Boat Radio. I'm Dr. John Ross of Clipper Telemed Plus, and this is Medical Emergencies at Sea. Babies on board boats. Oh my God. So the best way to call for help is to either, if you know somebody that is familiar to you, who's got some experience in this, then making contact with them via a cell phone or sat phone or whatever communication method you have would be good. Letting the Coast Guard know that you have a medical emergency and are going to require some assistance. If they can get out to you sooner than you can return to shore yourself. Again, keeping in mind that the Coast Guard and those sort of folks will have some fairly basic medical first responder folks on board, but are not necessarily going to have people that are going to be super thrilled to get that call from you saying that that there's a woman that seems like she's about to have a delivery. So this is going to be an unusual circumstance. They may well have practiced for this. They may not have. They might not have done it for a while. So again, you're going to get kind of a mixed bag. And the other thing is to have a medical online service available. And again, that's what we do. I guess putting a personal plug in for us. But and again, to be honest, we don't experience this sort of thing very often either. So we probably are not going to be super keen to get your call either. But again, we're going to be able to access our knowledge, our experience, and then be able to get hold of some other folks if we need to, if things start to get complicated. So things to be useful for us are going to be whether the person has any other medical problems, whether they've had any past obstetrical history, the number of deliveries in the past. So we know that people who have this is their first delivery are going to take a little bit longer than those who have had prior deliveries because they just tend to move along a lot faster. So someone who's had, say, two kids in the past, if this is kid number three, then expect that things are going to happen very, very quickly. Any problems in the past, like I mentioned earlier. And then also, people may also be complicating this with having some symptoms of a headache, blurry vision. They may have some higher abdominal pain, so not only low down where you might expect, but also higher up. And these can be signs of preeclampsia or even a thing called eclampsia, and that's where the blood pressure tends to go sky high, and they are at risk of all sorts of very bad outcomes, such as bleeding inside the head, seizures. And so that's going to be, again, uncommon. If you don't have a blood pressure measurement device, you may not be able to pick this up, but that's something, again, that's just going to make this a whole lot messier. You need to get them down below. You need to know that there is going to be some lots of fluid, plus or minus some blood, mixed in with this. So be prepared with as many absorbent things as you can. Expect it's going to be messy. And you want to get them into a comfortable spot where you've got some lighting and you've got some room to operate. And, of course, many boats don't have excessive amounts of room below. Berths are a bit squishy. You may need to kind of put down the dining table area and try and make a spot there. You want to remove clothing, of course, in the down below area specifically, but certainly keeping the woman who is now in labor warm. The way to position them is either in a semi-sitting position, so lying down flat, not that great. You want them kind of at a 30, 45 degree angle. And ideally, you also want to be able to elevate the buttocks. So there's going to actually be some room underneath their bottom area so that you have some room to work. Because when the infant does start appearing, there's going to have to be some movement both in the up and down direction. To help them sometimes. And you can either put them on their back in that semi-sitting position, or the other option would be to put them on their side and have an assistant hold the upper leg to, again, sort of create some space and give the woman some relaxation, but also ability to make some room for things. When the contractions are 2 minutes or less, delivery is going to be imminent. That means that the cervix probably has now fully opened. And there's a dilation process of the lower part of the vagina called the cervix, and it starts to open, and eventually it opens up wide enough to allow the head to get through. And as I said, things are going to move along pretty quickly at this point. Again, the person who has had a baby before, you're looking at several minutes. Whereas once fully dilated in a person who is first-time delivery, it may be anywhere from 30 to 30 minutes to 60 to 120, or sometimes even longer if the whole process sort of slows down. You're going to potentially see when you spread the legs that there is a bulging, and occasionally you'll even see the top of what may appear to be a head, and that's called crowning. And again, that is the imminent delivery. Women, when they get down to that point, are going to want to push. And here's where your job as a delivery assistant comes in. You need to try and slow down that process. There can be an explosive process because they really have this kind of reflex that they just want to bear down, and that means sort of holding their breath and just pushing for all they're worth. And that is understandable, but also not necessarily all that desirable. So one wants to try and sort of say, I want you to pant through this as opposed to pushing, so I want you to keep on breathing. That will actually help to reduce some of the pressure during those pushing phases, and then it gives you a bit more of a chance of having a more controlled delivery. The sequence of events is going to be, in the vast majority, you will see a head, as I mentioned. There are going to be times when you may see a foot, or you might see a buttock sticking out, and that's not going to be great. And I'm not going to get into this, spending any time on that particular, because it's not common, but it does happen, and those are breech deliveries. And there's a series of other things that one needs to do. So we're going to have to assume that this is a one-off, once in your lifetime, once in 10 lifetimes, and it's going to be a normal presentation with a head. The face will generally be downward, and so you'll be seeing the back of the head, and the head will present a kind of an oblique, sort of angled direction. Which is the widest space going between the pelvic bone at the front and the coccyx, or the backbone at the back. And the head needs to be gently kind of pushed down, or at least guided downward, so towards the bed. And then once the back of the head passes the front part of the pelvis, the head will then start to kind of turn upwards, and sort of face will start coming upwards. At that point, when the head starts to deliver, it will twist, and the next obstruction to delivery is going to be the shoulders. And generally what is advised is a very gentle assistance by again, moving the head downwards towards the bed to try and get that anterior shoulder past the pelvic bone. And generally that will go quite smoothly. And so you're going to be doing kind of a guiding, but also kind of holding back and really encouraging the woman to pant through this, to not push, let things sort of slowly glide out. Once you can get that anterior shoulder out, then the head is lifted up towards the ceiling ever so gently, and that will allow the posterior shoulder to pass through and deliver. And then once the head and shoulders are through, the rest of it will basically just plop out. I know that sounds delightful, and with it will come a little bit of a gush of stuff. Once the infant is delivered, then the most important part is to get that kid as dry as quickly as you can. I'll give you a break here just for a second to take this all in.
Oh, sun, won't you shine on me? Won't you shine on me when the rain has come?
Hi, I'm Sarah O'Kelly, founder of Skipper's Review. I started Skipper's Review because I wanted somewhere online for my local boating community to make connections and recommendations. So now it's up and running. I've been getting out of the office to enjoy the Florida sunshine and to meet some of my members. Each week, you can hear me swapping salty tales with sailors, surfers, swimmers, divers, boat owners, and builders, anyone with a story to tell about their life and their relationship with the sea. So join me, Sarah O'Kelly, with Skipper's Review on Boat Radio.
Okay, you're doing great. This is where we take a breath, and we hope that the baby takes a breath actually at the same time. So because it's going to be a precipitous delivery, may not have had any prenatal visits, we really don't know at all what we're getting into. We kind of hope that the kid has developed normally, and ideally will start to breathe normally. So stimulation of the neonate with some fairly vigorous, don't rub the skin off, but vigorous drying and a little bit of shaking as it goes, as well as trying to clear away any collected goo that might be around the face. Probably don't know this, but neonates are what we call obligate nose breathers, which means that they actually breathe through their noses, and they really don't breathe through their mouth much, which is kind of an odd thing. It does change over time. But so to have the nose clear of mucus blobs or blood or clots or whatever else is really, really important. So wiping the face, getting rid of that stuff, and then vigorously cleaning the infant will generally get them alert. We'll get them taking their first few breaths. And what you really want to hear is that cry. Once the infant is as dry as you can get them, then putting them up on their mum's bellies and hopefully even being able to get them clamped on to the breast early on will do several things. One is that it actually causes a reflex in the uterus area, which will help some of the contraction of the blood vessels and decrease bleeding. And it obviously soothes the baby, makes mom feel better. So there's a lot of good things about just simply moving the child up to its mother's breast. And early on, you want to consider clamping the cord. So some of the equipment that you want to have nearby would be some clean scissors or some kind of clean, sharp object. You want to wash your hands and kind of clean yourself up as best you can prior to starting this whole process. Putting on some rubber gloves would be ideal. You probably don't have them, but keeping yourself as clean as possible is obviously going to be key. I did mention getting lots of absorbent materials nearby. People always want to boil water. I think that's just, again, to kind of keep things sterile and clean, but and possibly to warm things up. The other important thing would be to have some ties, and whether that's some clips, which is what we tend to use, or whether you just have small little pieces of clean twine or something, because that will be that they can act as clamps for the umbilical cord. And then about 3 or 4 centimeters away from the infant, you tie one tie, and then another couple of centimeters down the cord, you tie another tie. And make sure they're really, really tight. You're basically gonna cut off the blood supply now through the cord. The kid is now operating independently and no longer requires that umbilical placenta attachment. And then you would cut in between those ties, and that then gives the you some freedom to move the infant around. So we're back to mother and child now, hopefully united via the breast if possible. It's not unusual to have some bleeding afterwards, and so one of the ways of both stopping some of the bleeding but also helping the placenta to deliver. So there's still another part to this whole process, which is the placenta attachment. And it looks a little bit like a jellyfish, frankly, which is attached to the inside of the uterus, which is the part that was giving oxygen and nutrients to the infant for the last 9 months, also needs to be delivered, and it's still attached to the cord. And so that will generally separate spontaneously over the next minutes. It might take half an hour sometimes, generally not that long. So it may be another 5, 10, 15 minutes before the placenta delivers. It's not unreasonable to put some very, very gentle traction. I mean, seriously, just gentle on the cord, which will be translated through the cervix and into the placenta, and just expect that will gradually start to separate, and it should come out as a whole object. Really, you're not going to be able to determine whether it's missing bits or not, but you want to keep put that in a plastic pail or some kind of container to take into the hospital when you finally do get there. So that's the emergency delivery on board a boat. The next phases, of course, would be just getting mother and child into a healthcare facility for further care, making sure that there are no other remaining pieces of placenta or anything else that may cause them some trouble down the road. And then high fives all around the people who were there to assist in this terrifying but sometimes a too common event. Please send any questions you have to medical, which is medical, at boatradio, all one word, .net. Also, any ideas for future shows? I'm always willing to hear about some interesting cases, and we can discuss them for the whole group, because usually when there's some question from somebody, it's probably shared by many other people. Thanks for listening. This is John Ross, Medical Director of Clipper Telemed Plus, doing medical emergencies at sea for Boat Radio.
Oh, Lord, please bring me shelter. Please bring me shelter from yonder storm. Oh, Lord, please bring me shelter. Please bring me shelter from yonder storm. Oh, sun, won't you shine on me? Won't you shine on me when the rain has come? Oh, sun, won't you shine on me? Won't you shine on me when the rain has come?
Hi, I'm Dave Dempsey from Marine Intelligence. If you're the owner or captain of a superyacht, then you know how expensive internet can be. And yes, it's a rip-off. We've made it our mission to revolutionize the world of marine communications. We will find you the best price for your internet by comparing all major vendors. And we do that for free. That's right, no charge to the boat. It's a free service. We get you the best price for your yacht, whether it's just one boat or a fleet of boats, and all the savings will be passed on to you. We can save you over $1,000 per meg. So stop doing what you're doing and visit marineintelligence.net now, before you forget.